Hey, everybody. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. We try to navigate through this crazy clown world together. We don't have all of the answers, but we try to navigate this with you and find the facts here. So we've got a busy show for you on this Thursday. We're going to dive into this false flag discussion around Poland. Poland making a lot of headlines over the past 48 hours. The arrest of two members of parliament in Poland as the police stormed the presidential palace. And Nikki Haley, of course, saying that, you know, Putin is ready to invade Poland. This is the next staging ground for NATO's attack and expansion against Russia. So we're going to dive deeply into the Polish question tonight.
And get ready for higher taxes. In Toronto, the mayor is raising taxes by 10% because of the influx of immigrants to provide for refugee shelters. Residents are saying, what the heck? Do you know that the economy already sucks and then you're taking from us? She says, hey, I didn't create this, but it's you who has to pay for it. We're going to break down those numbers. It will piss you right off.
Can you imagine just waking up one day and you find out your property taxes are 10% higher?
It could be 16%. Watch this story. It's going to set your hair on fire. And if it doesn't, I want to know why.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The refugee problem is now homeowners' problems. Okay. And we're also going to look at the biggest trends of 2024. Our friend Gerald Salenti from the Trends Journal is joining us today. We're going to break down some of the biggest trends. He's nailed, I mean, the stock market crash of 1986. The list is long. I've been friends with Gerald for many, many years, and his information is spot on. He was right last year, and now we're heading into 2024. What will be the big trends of 2024? All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, everybody, to the big show on this Thursday. So glad to have all of you here. If you guys do subscribe to the channel and you're watching us, whether on Rumble or YouTube, your name will pop up here on the big board right behind us here underneath the giant $34 trillion in national debt, U.S. national debt calculator that's up there. So you guys, if you subscribe, your name will pop up here on the big screen.
All right. Also, you can subscribe to the Redacted newsletter. It is totally free. There's nothing behind a paywall. We don't upsell you anything. We write this mostly to help ourselves prepare for the show. So we write the newsletter in the morning, and then we expand upon that information in the day's show where you are right now. So you can read the newsletter every day that this show is live Monday through Thursday by subscribing at redacted.inc. Put in your email address and then click the authentication email. It takes about 5 minutes to read it. We read it, we write it in kind of a jovial manner. Would you say it's jovial? We try to present this show in a jovial manner.
We try, yeah. Well, we try to make it light, you know, lighthearted, so you'll smile a little bit over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning, and it's written
even when the news
nice
is not jovial, we aim to be jovial, likable. Yeah, that's, I mean, maybe we should crochet that on a pillow.
It's like Gary Ganoos is, remember Gary Ganoos? No good news is good news without Gary Ganoos.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. That's where we're going, you guys, because the world is crazy, but we're not, and we're in it together, and we're happy to have like-minded readers and viewers like you. So please do subscribe to the Redacted newsletter at redacted.inc. Again, it's totally free. Comes out Monday through Thursday. You can find it at redacted.inc.
Well, are we watching a major false flag event unfolding in Poland? Is this the new front in NATO's war against Russia, the provocation there? Warmonger and neocon Nikki Haley says Putin is about to attack Poland and the Baltics. Watch.
Russia said once they take Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next. Those are NATO countries. That puts America at war. This is about preventing war.
And this week, police in Poland arrested a few members of the Polish parliament, storming the presidential palace in the process. Take a look at the aftermath of that. So is Poland facing a constitutional crisis? Is all of this unfolding in Poland as we speak? What exactly is going on in that country? Is this the next front in NATO's war against Russia? Let's bring in Mike Krupa, journalist in Warsaw, Poland. host of Votum TV, who's watching this all very, very closely. Mike, thanks for joining us here to help cut through some of the perhaps Western propaganda on this and some of the fog and the smoke that's associated with what's happening in Poland. So first, before we get into the false flag, perhaps, discussion and what Nikki Haley had to say about attacks from Russia, I want to talk about the sort of breaking news which has been unfolding over the past 48 hours. These two members of parliament, and we'll put them up here on your screen here, these two members of parliament were arrested. And I think the West is saying that these were conservative members of parliament, and therefore this is a constitutional crisis. What's going on here?
Okay, well, maybe just to give, it's good to be back, by the way. Thanks again, Clayton. Happy New Year. Maybe just to give you back some background on why these two guys are arrested. So first of all, the two mentioned ex-MPs, actually, they are Mariusz Kamiński and Maciej Wąsik. So Mariusz Kamiński is the former Minister of the Interior up until the end of October of last year. He was at the forefront of many of these nefarious deeds that are going to be subject to investigation under the new regime in Poland, including entrapment, encroachment on private communications, and a lot of things that you would associate with typical deep state activities, such as things that, for example, Michael Hayden or James Clapper in the United States would encourage and would applaud. Now, Wąsik, the other MP that was arrested, was basically his aide-de-camp. He was his right-hand man ever since they were active in politics since about two decades ago. So during the last regime of the Law and Justice Party, which ended in October with the new elections, these two guys were very formidable figures in the Ministry of Interior. Now, in 2007, when Mariusz Kamiński was head of the newly formed Anti-Corruption Bureau in Poland, there was an operation directed at the then Deputy Prime Minister of Poland and Minister of Agriculture, the late Andrzej Leper. Now, what happened was, it turns out there was documents that were being falsified to show that Andrzej Leper made some real estate deals that were shady. And after a couple of years, this came out, the courts deemed that Kamiński and Wąsik, they were both guilty of doing things that were illegal from their posts in order to entrap Andrzej Leper. Now, Andrzej Leper, some of you Polish watchers may know, committed suicide in 2011, but many believe he committed suicide just like Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide. So that case stinks to high heaven. And because they were in court for that, there was a lower court ruling whereby they were found guilty, but they were able to appeal their case. However, right after they were found guilty, the current president of Poland, Andrzej Duda, pardoned them. And a huge legal war began because many legal scholars stated that the president does not have the power to pardon people who can still appeal, because technically they're still innocent. So unless you get a higher court ruling, you're still deemed innocent. So people were asking, who was he pardoning if these guys were still innocent? So that created a whole sort of legal mumbo jumbo and circus, whereby two camps of the legal scholar community in Poland were battling it out whether these guys were legally pardoned or they weren't legally pardoned. And it turns out a few months back, another court ruling came back that said that the president could not have pardoned these guys. They are guilty, and therefore they cannot remain MPs. So the speaker of the Sejm, Szymon Hołownia, he took away their privileges, their rights to being MPs, and they were deemed to be officially criminals. Now, the president who had their back, that's President Andrzej Duda, the same one who pardoned them back in 2015, I believe it was, he claims that they are innocent, and in order to sort of get them away from the justice system, he invited them 2 days ago into the presidential palace to take part in a swearing ceremony of two new advisors that were being employed by the president. But because the guests, the two mentioned MPs, came there and the president was still not in the presidential palace, he was actually taking a meeting with, I forgot her first name, but Mrs. Tikhanovskaya. She's the official opposition leader in Belarus, which is kind of an embarrassment in and of itself, because she's basically an instrument of nothing else than color revolution and regime change in Belarus. So the fact that the president of Poland was meeting with her is a disgrace in and of itself. But the president, being away from the presidential palace, was not there, which allowed the police, it sort of gave them, you know, a carte blanche to enter the palace and to handcuff these guys and arrest them. And that created a huge shitstorm, so to say, because a lot of people said, you know, what the hell is this? You got police coming into the presidential palace, taking these guys out. And in a way, they are right, because it does make Poland look like a banana republic. But I would like to stress that many Polish-friendly and conservative commentators in the West, you know who you are, Jack Posobiec, by the way, claim that the two arrested guys were somehow anti-globalists and conservatives. Far from it. If you consider Lindsey Graham to be a conservative, then these two guys are also conservatives. Kaminski and Wąsik were at the forefront of implementing the most crazy COVID-19 regimes in Poland. They fought against dissident voices on the internet who were protesting Poland's approach to the war in Ukraine. They were tapping into conversations. A lot of people had their lives ruined because of these guys. I know a friend of mine who was actually the first political prisoner of the Third Republic, that is Poland after 1989, who was arrested, and they considered him to be a sort of Russian spy and also a Chinese spy. His name is Mateusz Piskorski, sort of the Julian Assange of Poland, who spent 3 years in a Polish prison without a conviction, and he only went out after 300,000 zlotys bail, so he's free right now. But his movements are sort of, you know, limited, and the case is still ongoing. But the case has no legs, basically. Mateusz Piskorski is not a spy. He was basically talking sense about Polish foreign policy. So in a nutshell, as I said, this is a long conversation and two battling sides coming in from, you know, from the right and from the left. But I would like to make one thing especially clear to all our viewers in the West. The two arrested guys, Kaminski and Wąsik, are not conservatives. They were all in for the Russophobic neocon project. They were all in for the European Union. And considering them conservatives, as I said, is tantamount to considering people like Lindsey Graham or Nikki Haley, who we're going to talk about, also a conservative. They are conservative in name only and very much globalist and very much pro-EU.
Well, thank you for setting the record straight on that. Okay, so now we mentioned Nikki Haley, and so we got the MP part of this story out of the way, but Poland is top of the news for other reasons. Nikki Haley, of course, as I played there just a moment ago, saying that Putin is about to invade Poland. This is why we need to funnel money and weapons into Ukraine. And I want to play this. You mentioned Jack Posobiec. Let's play what Jack had to say yesterday about false flags in Poland and see if he's right on this piece. You disagreed with him on the MP part. Let's see if he's correct here. Take a listen.
Going back to Poland, I said, look for provocations in Poland. Look for the false flags in Poland, which they've been trying multiple times now. Every time one of these Ukrainian missiles falls down in Poland, every time a couple of farmers get killed by them, they blame it on Russia. They say it's Soviet made. Well, it turns out they're Ukrainian missiles that are hitting. They're using false flag attacks. And now they're ratcheting things up with the escalation. They've got their globalist in power in the parliament in terms of that side of Polish government. They're having him arrest, again, members of parliament, fellow members of parliament. That's basically analogous to our congressman saying that I will arrest you, even though you're a sitting member of parliament that's taken up sanctuary in storming the presidential palace of Warsaw to go after these guys. And now for the first time in 35 years since communism, Poland has political prisoners once again. This is all directed by Brussels.
Okay, so false flag operations. We certainly saw, Jack's absolutely right. Last year when we saw that missile that was launched and immediately the Ukrainian response was, see, Putin just launched a missile into Poland. And we know it wasn't Putin, and Putin had nothing to do with it. Russia had nothing to do with it, that it was Ukrainian. So are we about to see Poland become the center of a false flag destination for an expansion of this war against Russia?
Well, I think a lot of people would love to see that. A lot of people would like to see Poland more engaged in this war. And so far, ever since the new government was sworn in, we've only seen sort of rhetorical musings coming from the likes of Radoslaw Sikorski and Applebaum's husband, by the way, who's the new foreign minister, who said recently that, you know, the United States, the West should provide more ATACMS missile, more long-range missiles for Ukraine. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the only thing that the government is doing right now is basically rhetoric. By the way, yesterday or the day before, the justice minister, one Adam Bodnar, who, by the way, has Ukrainian roots himself, had a meeting with the American ambassador in Poland, one Mark Brzezinski, who's the son of the late Zbigniew Brzezinski. And on his Twitter page, he wrote the following. I am glad that Ambassador Mark Brzezinski positively assesses the ministry's activities leading to the restoration of the rule of law in Poland. I am glad that the ambassador of a foreign country positively assesses. I mean, that's fairly demeaning coming from a so-called sovereign country. I find that demeaning, at least, and a lot of people find it demeaning. It's as if he went to explain himself to the embassy that we're back right now, the liberals are back in power, and you have nothing to worry about. So I think in that sense, Nikki Haley probably thinks, and I think she's right to some extent, that Poland is still the willing executioner of whatever idiotic ideas come from the State Department and some neocon think tanks regarding Russia and Washington, that we're still going to be willing executioners of that. I tend to think we're going to be less radical in that regard than we were when Law and Justice was in power. However, I would not rule out dangerous tendencies that might somehow, you know, come to place in Poland based on instructions coming from Washington or even hints. As you noticed, probably there was a Wall Street Journal report this week whereby Poland is apparently obstructing the investigation into who blew up Nord Stream 2. Now, it's funny because the Wall Street Journal, which I'm pretty sure is getting its leaks from people in Langley, wants to say that Poland is obstructing justice in terms of not allowing investigators to seep deeper into the that sailboat that apparently carried the crew that blew up Nord Stream 2. So I think it's a diversionary tactic because I think, I mean, the evidence, you know, Seymour Hersh's reporting on this is excellent, that the United States blew up Nord Stream 2 is overwhelming. And let's not forget that famous tweet by Radek Sikorski, "Thank you, USA," from last year. He never explained himself why he wrote that. I think he was just being truthful. And when you're being, you know, in a high state of emotional ecstasy, you tend to talk the truth even later, you know, if you back off from that, because I think that tweet was deleted afterwards. I think Ann Applebaum might have told him, "Hey, Radek, take it easy. Don't spill the beans already." So Nikki Haley, it's a fantasy, you know, that Russia's going to attack Poland. Russia has no reason to attack Poland. You know, Mongolia might as well attack Poland. It makes absolutely no sense. I think it's just this neocon building up of tensions that, you know, be on guard, and for Polish, you know, hawks to say, oh, look, somebody in America is looking out for our interests. They want to give us more weapons, want to sell us more arms. So they see the danger that we should be also seeing. It's pure propaganda, and there's no truth and merit to it whatsoever.
So, you know, I truly believe that Putin has no desires to attack Poland. But of course, by ratcheting up that rhetoric, they're making it seem like that those are his intentions, and putting all on, or, you know, on CNN, this is what Putin wants to do, according to Nikki Haley. So do you think there is a potential for a false flag, for someone to launch some sort of attack inside of Poland? And see, we told you it was Putin, even though they have nothing to do with it.
I think that's always a possibility. If you remember, there was a fairly big expose in Newsweek, I think, in July of last year, an article about the sort of behind-the-scenes games going on between the Russian special services and the American special services about not crossing each other's red lines. And there's a very important sentence in that expose, which was overlooked. And I was kind of like surprised that, you know, people from CIA would actually admit this, that ever since 2014, the third largest CIA station in Europe is the CIA station in Poland. Now, knowing the tendency for the CIA to conduct false flag operations to, you know, get the effects that they want, I wouldn't rule out such an operation taking place in Poland, considering the fact that we have the third largest CIA operation happening in Poland, right out of that station in Warsaw. So I wouldn't rule that out. However, I do hope that cooler heads would prevail. Poles, definitely, even the ones who voted for this government, have no stomach for a fight with Russia. You know, they're tiresome of the entire flow of refugees. By the way, facilitated by the Mariusz Kamiński, who was arrested 2 days ago when he was Minister of the Interior, the entire border was open with no screening after 24 February 2022. Anyone could get into this country. There are estimates that we have a lot of Russian spies actually in Poland right now who are pretending to be Ukrainian refugees. Wow. Deja vu all over again, so to say. But it was during his watch, for example, also that when the Russian ambassador was doused with red paint 2 years ago during a commemoration ceremony to the Soviet soldiers that are lying. There's a big, you know, a Soviet cemetery in Warsaw. The Russian ambassador, Andreev, came to lay flowers. He was doused with red paint by these Ukrainian yahoos. And the Minister of Interior, who's the head of police in Poland, you know, tweeted, yeah, you know, maybe it was inappropriate, but it's understandable. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't write the same thing if the American ambassador got doused with red paint. I mean, we'd have a special military operation looking for the perpetrators. You know, we'd probably have martial law and total lockdowns. So the guy is a total, and I'm not afraid to say this, I think I could say this on your show, Mariusz Kamiński is an asshole, really. The guy has a lot of things that he should explain himself for. And literally, it's the Michael Hayden, James Clapper School of Intelligence, of wiretapping and entrapment. And this guy should stay the hell away from the Polish Secret Services and from Polish politics.
Yeah. And well, hey, congratulations then that he was arrested. Good thing, I guess, for the Polish government swooping in and grabbing
the guy. You know, I just want to add, I'm not saying that he would, that, you know, this whole legal battle that's taking place and what happened in the presidential palace is right. You know, innocent until proven guilty. I may not like Mariusz Kamiński, but until he's proven guilty, he's innocent. However, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence. Plus, you know, the tweets, the public statements that he made, and the fact that he did open up the border, literally, to millions of Ukrainian refugees, and not only Ukrainian refugees, people from all over the world. We were sort of like the southern border in the United States, without screening, who just came into Poland after 24th February, which is a big risk to national security, and I think you should be held accountable for that.
Well said. Well, thank you, Mike, for helping us sort through the propaganda here, also the Western narrative in this, painting these individuals as conservatives. Fascinating. And to also try to uproot and figure out this false flag operation. As always, Mike Krupa, great to see you from Warsaw, Poland. Stay warm up there. Hopefully, I know it's snowing there right now, but hopefully the worst of the cold has passed for at least a few more days.
Hopefully. Once again, sorry for the A word, but you know, sometimes it's the only word
you're welcome
find.
To do it. That's right. That's right. I'm from Philadelphia. So sometimes those words end up being the most important words. Exactly. I know it's hard to admit. Mike, great to see you. Thanks so much. Happy New Year to
you. Happy New Year. Take care, Clinton. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Mike. We really appreciate it. And that's why I love having Mike on. Very, very smart, but able to cut through this propaganda and cut through the noise and give us an awareness of what's actually happening in Warsaw, Poland, which could really be the sort of the future battleground right now for NATO expansion against Russia. So we'll keep our eyes there. But we've got more news to get to here on your Thursday. We're going to look at this refugee problem in Canada. Hey, all these refugees coming across the border. You know what? How we'll pay for it? We'll raise property taxes. So all you homeowners up there that the World Economic Forum doesn't want you to own homes, right? They really want you to own nothing. They want you to be renters. So if you own a home, you will be the ones now potentially bearing the burden of the refugee crisis, both
well,
in the United States and in Canada.
Well, renters will too, because they're going to pass on those increased costs to tenants. So it's going to be more expensive for everybody. We're going to look at this budget. It's also because the government is admitting that they lost so much money during the pandemic that you have to pay for lockdowns. It's written in the budget.
Well, here's another way they're going to screw you in Canada. We're going to look more deeply at Canada's universal basic income also, because UBI coming to a Trudeau government near you. Hey, if you want to survive in Canada as a politician, give away some free money. That's the way to do it. And so Justin Trudeau looking for universal basic income. We'll get to that and more, but first
we want to tell you about our friends over at Aura, because if you have ever searched for your personal information about yourself or someone you know, such as your name, email, or phone number, you may see it in a search site, and you should understandably feel uncomfortable about that. Whenever that happens and you find anything about yourself, you should take a look at where your information is being brokered. For instance, a lot of times you might wake up, this happens to me a lot, where I get a two-factor authentication saying, here's your code to change your password on whatever platform. I haven't been trying to change my password. Someone else is trying to get into that. So data brokers are making a fortune by selling your information to robocallers, spammers, and others. So you can get on top of that with an account at Aura. They can identify data brokers exposing your information and help you submit opt-out requests on your behalf. Brokers are legally required to remove your information if you ask them, but they make it so stinking hard to do it. That's why Aura can handle it for you. And Aura, again, is our show sponsor today. So it's so easy to set up. You don't have to download several different apps or get things like a VPN or antivirus. You right now can either let people continue to exploit and profit off of your information, or you can get ahead of it and go to aura.com/redacted. One more time, that's aura.com/redacted to start your 2-week free trial. Use this link right here that you see, aura.com/redacted. Well, guess who has to pay for illegal immigration in Canada? Taxpayers. Get ready, US and Europe, because you're probably next.
Why are you pointing to me?
Watch this template.
Why are you pointing to me?
I'm pointing to all of you.
All of us.
Who speak English. who or
David, David, you're going to be paying for it. We're all going to be paying for it.
You don't have to necessarily speak English.
they're going to give me a discount because I think what's going to happen is they're going to say, hey, well, it's going to be 16%, but if you will drop it to 10, if you can house a few migrants. So I'll just have, I got a big house here and I'll just house
you're
a few.
You're going to be housing a few migrants. Okay. Yeah. The military aged men migrants.
Well, see okay. How that goes. It doesn't have to just do with migrants, though. The state or the city of Toronto is admitting that they need to increase taxes on homeowners because of the increase in migrants and because of the pandemic. Because the city lost so much money during the pandemic that you need to pay for it. Now, think back during lockdowns. If you were someone who was like, oh, lockdowns, it's necessary. If you thought that that was okay, did you think about how much this would come on you and your finances? I bet you didn't.
No.
And we're going to show you exactly, the city wrote it out, how much lockdowns cost them and how much they want you to pay for it, as well as the influx of migrants. Those are the two main reasons the budget in Toronto is suffering, and they want to reach into taxpayers' pockets to pay for it. The new Liberal mayor in Toronto is saying that she's planning to raise taxes by 10.5% because of the budget crisis. This is the biggest increase ever. But they say that if they don't get more money from the federal government, they're going to raise it an increased 6%. So total 16.5% increase of property taxes so that Toronto can deal with its migrant crisis. Watch.
Toronto homeowners are bracing for a historic property tax hike. The 10-year average has been 2.6%. This year's increase will be in the double digits.
And we do have a financial mess, and it needs to be fixed, right? That's what we're doing.
Toronto homeowners are facing a proposed 9% property tax increase, plus a 1.5% city building fund levy, bringing the total to 10.5%, the highest ever hike since amalgamation more than 20 years ago.
It is significant. There is sticker shock to it.
And the city's budget chief warns that number could skyrocket to 16.5% if the federal government doesn't provide $250 million needed to support refugees currently in Toronto's shelter system.
Now, it is extra upsetting. I'm going to play you this clip, and I apologize, the audio is a bit tinny. When the Mayor Chow says she didn't create this financial mess, but it needs to be fixed. What is unsaid then is by you. Watch.
I did not create this financial mess, but it needs to be fixed.
Now you have to think, if you voted for her, you voted for her to fix it. You didn't vote to pay for it yourself, right? That's what I would think. Here's Dr. Jay Goldberg from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation explaining exactly how much this will cost taxpayers.
For the average homeowner, that's a $750 property tax increase. At a time when 400,000 Ontarians are working more than one job to make ends meet, and grocery bills will be up $700 this year for the average family, Toronto taxpayers cannot afford Chow's reckless tax hike. Toronto City Councillors must stand strong and reject Mayor Chow's property tax hike. Reach out to your local councillor and demand that they vote no on Chow's proposed budget.
Now, officials are warning that they have been warning the government for 2 years that an increase in immigration would increase costs to taxpayers, and the government has just not listened. They blatantly ignored these warnings. So who created this mess that taxpayers are in that now Mayor Chow says they have to fix? Well, if you look at the proposed budget, it's an admission that most of the deficit was created by the government because of pandemic lockdowns. So take a look at this graphic. What they're saying here is that everything you see that is increasing costs here that's in yellow is due to the pandemic. Now think about it. When you thought about lockdowns, we were told, oh, the government's gonna pay you some money, right, to stay home. The government's gonna handle, rental assistance or whatever it was at the time. We told you, I hate to say I told you so, but we told you that you would eventually pay for these things, right? Did
right.
we not say
yes,
this?
Yes, it would come back.
Did economists not say this?
And did it not show up here in terms of how much the national debt has accelerated?
Well, yes, this is the American national debt. Right. We're talking about Canada, but these are mirror image economies, right?
That's my point. Well, exactly. Yeah, so you, the taxpayer, are going to be paying for this.
And also, by locking down all the companies that had to shut down, look at all the tax revenue and stuff that they lost that whole time.
Right. Well, take a look at this budget again. I mean, look at what it's saying here is that the dark blue is inflation. That's why costs are up. The light blue is just there's stymied growth. So they're not growing as much as they need to bring revenues in. But the yellow is the damage caused to the by the pandemic, which maybe you voted for, or maybe you didn't, right? But that is it. An inordinate increase in the cost of living in your social contract with the government that economists were saying you will pay for this. And people were saying, no, we won't. We just want our stimulus check. We're not worried about it. Well, you'll worry about it now. The budget also says that the increase in numbers of refugees expected in 2024 could increase the budget by 65%. Take a look at this. They are flat out saying that homeowners should be glad that they're not getting a 42% property tax increase, because that's what it would really cost to bring in all of these expected, let's see, 10,600 shelter beds that they're going to need this year, 4,800 beds expected to be used by refugees. Now, here is where they say that the federal government, if the federal government doesn't cough up more money for these refugees, then the city of Toronto will tax its residents by an increase of 6%. So they're already saying they want 10.5%. They're willing to add this 6% to that number. So it would be a 16.5% increase in property taxes for homeowners and business owners. So get ready.
Those of us that don't really understand property tax, is that property tax on the land that the house sits on, or does that include the house as well?
It's the usually it's the city's assessed value of what property. That property would sell for. And usually they're kind of generous. They don't use the most current market rates. They use about an average.
Property with the house.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, with the improvements.
Oh, it's wow. Like yeah. You could sell this house. Let's say you could sell the house for $400,000. Then they're going to take 16% per year of that value.
Wow.
So you'll be holy paying cow. It every year.
Yeah.
Now, and you saw in that piece that that could add up to quite a bit of money. For the average homeowner, and business owners will also pay it. Now, the Toronto Star says that this budget was based on a survey that they have seen, and it indicates that taxpayers want it. They say about 30% of the people who took a survey for this budget wanted more funding for migrants and to defund the police. 30% is not a big number. And I am going to wager that the 30% who voted for this are not actually homeowners.
Oh, I bet. They're renters in Toronto, and they're liberal renters in Toronto.
Yeah.
They probably went to the University of Toronto.
Okay.
They went on campus. Say,
tax the rich. You're being more kind.
Tax the rich.
You're being more kind than my assessment. My guess is they were all in the Toronto budget office, and that's who they interviewed for, for this.
Right.
They're like, it's so cold outside. We don't want to leave the building. Can everyone come down to the conference room? We want to take a poll.
And even if they weren't homeowners, they were probably myopic enough to think that, yes, we should defund the police and give more money to migrants, but it shouldn't come out of my budget. It will, even if you're a renter, because do you think that your landlord who has this increased property tax bill is not going to then pass that increased cost to you for your rent? Well, think again. They absolutely will, and they definitely should. I would wager, that they wanted the city to funnel their money into migrants and less to the police, but not their money, but they will, because that's your contract, your social contract. If you voted this way in Toronto, I really would like to know your rationale. I'm so curious.
Yeah, defund the police.
And more money for migrants.
And more money for immigrants.
And I just wonder, like to show you this. Do you care that according to Toronto police, crime is up by 21%? The city has grown by 13%. But the number of police officers has declined by 11%. Do you not believe it, or do you not care? I'm really curious if you voted this way, that this is what you want out of the budget. And to be clear, Mayor Chow's budget doesn't cut funding for police. It is a top line item. Take a look there. They still do intend to spend a lot on police, but also on migrants. So this is just a proposal. You can get involved if you want. Here's the schedule. You can call your representative if you are a Toronto resident. How much do you think the mayor is willing to hear? and change? I don't know. She's not even a year into her first term. And again, you know, this cost will be passed on to everybody. Even if you're not a renter, even if you're not a homeowner, you think that the businesses that are paying these increased costs will increase their cost of business to you, their cost of goods, their cost of services. This will overall increase costs in Toronto, which is already really expensive. And if you're not in Canada, but you live in another progressive run city, hold on to your butt, because this will come to you too. We showed you this video yesterday of immigrants being moved into a high school because their shelter was in danger of collapsing. High school students in Brooklyn were forced into virtual learning because the migrants had nowhere to go. And so they got booted from their shelter, and the students got booted from their school. Watch this again. So progressives like AOC say we should just document these people and then let them support themselves. But she's just basically the glossier American version of Justin Trudeau.
Right.
And so when will that happen, though? Because until those people get a document and a job and a house, it's us that pays for it, the taxpayers. And then here's a question, follow up question I have for that proposal is, when those people get documents and jobs, will our tax rates go back down then when that happens?
Of course not.
Yeah.
Of course not. Does that ever happen?
Also, think about what that, like, I think that's going to have a negative, an opposite effect to what they think, because people aren't going to want to move there now. And the people that are there that can't afford it are going to leave. So it's like they're going to lose a lot more than they're going to gain, it would seem.
They'll lose their tax base.
Who's going to want to move to that area?
Like, just look at California. Look at California.
Right.
I mean, you're literally, you got a $60 billion budget deficit now in California.
$68 billion, yes.
$68 billion. And you have the largest exodus in California's history. For the first time ever in the past year, you've seen in 2022 and into 2023, the largest population decline leaving the state because of the policies of that state, of that liberal government.
Right.
It's not a mystery. So you're going to start to see this all over Canada. You're already seeing a massive exodus of doctors in Canada. You're seeing a lot of the brain drain in Canada leaving the country. So, you have extra wait times for people going to the hospital to get specialized care in Canada. This is a crisis, and it's a crisis of Trudeau's own making.
Right.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts of this in the comments below. We will get to more of that in Canada news in just a moment, actually, because, you know, so much of what's happening right now in Canada is as a result of the World Economic Forum and what you can see spreading to other parts of the Western world. You can see it obviously spreading to the United States, Australia, parts of Europe as well. And universal basic income could be the answer for the Trudeau government. How to get more votes and survive in political power? Give people free money, universal basic income. So we'll tell you about what the Trudeau government is doing there. Plus, we're going to look at the biggest trends of 2024. Our friend Gerald Salenti is going to join us from the Trends Journal.
But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Bio Optimizers, because if your New Year's resolution is health related, well, you know you have to focus on your sleep then. If there was just one thing you could do to improve your overall well-being, it would be to sleep better. And a great way to do that is with the number one mineral for that. We're talking about magnesium. We're actually specifically talking about Magnesium Breakthrough by Bio Optimizers. They are a friend of the show. Their Bio Optimizers product has 7 different forms of magnesium in this supplement, and they have over 300 enzymatic reactions in the body. Pretty much every function in your body gets upgraded when you take magnesium, from the quality of your sleep to your brain function, from metabolism to stress levels. And let's face it, even if your 2024 resolution is not to focus on your health, how are you going to be able to achieve any of your goals if you don't sleep well and manage your stress? So do yourself a favor and make Magnesium Breakthrough part of your daily routine this year so you can get the vitality you need in order to conquer your dreams. Go to biooptimizers.com/redacted right now and enter promo code redacted to get 10% off any order. That's biooptimizers.com/redacted.
Well, Canada's Justin Trudeau seems to be trying to do everything possible to stay in power and hang on to power. Now the Liberal government in Canada is rolling out a plan for universal basic income. This is, of course, the World Economic Forum's dream, which is pay you a universal basic income, keep you at home so you don't have to work. You don't have to be on the roads with your carbon emissions. You can stay in your 15-minute cities and we'll pay you a universal basic income to work remotely or just stay home and live off the land. This is the dream, and Canada seems to be embracing this, and Justin Trudeau embracing UBI. David Creighton writes at Human Events. He's also on YouTube at Creighton's Right, and he joins us, first of all, with a very handsome sweatshirt for the new year, 2024. David, welcome to the show. Good to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Clayton, and nice to be back. And yes, I'm wearing my redacted hoodie because it's the first episode for me of the year, and it's, UBI, Universal Basic Income. It's also now being called unconditional basic income. And where is this coming from? It's quite complex because there's two private members' bills going through the Senate of Canada and the House of Commons at the same time. There's also a lobby group called UBI Works that is extremely well funded. They claim it's all from grassroots support. But I think they're getting some support here from the government of Canada or the Liberal Party, both or either. And they're working hard behind the scenes. And by the way, I was blocked from their X site as soon as I did a broadcast a couple of weeks ago about universal basic income, because they don't want any criticism, any questioning about this. The funny thing about this, Clayton, is that these bills were first introduced in October. There was a news conference, which virtually nobody attended. The national media wasn't there. And you can find it on YouTube. But it's interesting. 2 months later, suddenly, there's all of these stories appearing about universal basic income and how it might be the answer to poverty. Now, what is this? Obviously, this is Justin Trudeau's trial balloon to see how this is going to work. And what it really amounts to is that you get $2,000 a month for doing nothing. And apparently, if you do any other work on the side, they'll subtract 50 cents on the dollar. So what it really comes down to is that I think it was Karl Marx, actually, who said, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. This is rank Marxism, is what this is. Paying people to sit on their behinds and do absolutely nothing. And as people have pointed out to me, since I've written this article and I've done a couple of broadcasts already on this, how are we going to get people to work at all if they're guaranteed $2,000 a month? And will this not create an underground economy as well, as people say, hey, I'm just not going to report the income. I want my $2,000 plus. But really, the worst part of this is I say this is a tragic leap off the fiscal cliff for Canada, because what it amounts to is that $2,000 is not going to be worth $2,000 anymore as soon as you start giving everybody $2,000. I mean, that's fingers and thumbs arithmetic. It's pretty basic stuff. If everybody has $2,000, then nobody has $2,000 anymore. And it's going to devalue the Canadian currency. There's no question about that. It's not just inflationary spending, but it is insanity spending, because it's going to mean, yeah, I've got $2,000, but suddenly the rent went up to $5,000 a month. So because $2,000 isn't worth anything anymore. And this is chaos, absolute chaos.
Well, that's exactly what happens when they do that with car subsidies, right? The auto manufacturers, they're going to give you a $7,000 subsidy so you can do this. And then the car manufacturers raise the price $7,000 to compensate and to match it. I've looked at a lot of these pilot programs over the years for universal basic income with the, you know, with great interest and to see how, in fact, it could maybe elevate and bring people out of poverty. But if there's a disincentive to work, you are asking for chaos. You are asking for a collapse of democracy. If you're you're incentivizing people to not work, to not be productive, to not provide to society, to not create, to not build, to go into construction, to innovate, you're encouraging them to stay home. And if they're and if they do work, they're penalized. This is the opposite of sort of a welfare to work program. And people falling on hard times. You know, I'm not without empathy for people going through hard times and needing this transitional period, you know, maybe a helping hand for a short amount of time, with the encouragement and the idea that they will find employment, that they will find work, and they will get back as a member of society that's contributing to society. But Trudeau's government seems to be wanting to keep people from contributing and instead just wants to buy votes. That's the way it appears to me.
This is a colossal bribery scheme. That's all this is. The only other period in Prime Minister Trudeau's reign of terror I can think of that reminds me of this is when he offered legalized marijuana for everybody to placate the masses. And I think this is another example of bribing people to say, hey, you can stay home and do nothing. You got used to doing that during the pandemic when he offered what was called the CERB, which was a conditional stipend that was given to everybody who stayed home and couldn't work anymore or didn't want to work anymore. This is a continuation of that. And there is no incentive to find a job. And it really is bribery. But it's interesting because I think Trudeau wanted this trial balloon to sort of continue to be there over the 6 weeks that the House of Commons isn't sitting, and it's not right now. But the funny thing is, as God would have it, I really believe he's been caught up not only in his vacation, which was another disaster, staying while everybody is starving in Canada because of his impoverishing carbon tax. He goes to Jamaica and stays at a $10,000 a night resort for 2 weeks. And what else happens? His deputy prime minister has a journalist arrested. So what are people talking about now? They're not talking about universal basic income this week. They're talking about how Trudeau has no empathy for people in need at all because he can spend $10,000 a night because it's free because he's staying at a friend's resort in Jamaica. And his deputy prime minister can have journalists arrested for asking the wrong questions. So that now is what people are talking about in Canada. That seems to have taken precedence over this stupid plan to have people stay at home for $2,000 a month.
Can you follow, we talked at the beginning about following the money here. Where do you think this funding, who's pushing this program in Canada? Have you been able to follow it, you know, to some shady characters? I'm just curious who's really trying to push this universal basic income plan in Canada.
Yes, if you go to UBI Works, it is UBI Works as it's usually spelled, you can see the people behind these. These are woke academics who are behind this. And these are economists who have expertise in fields you wouldn't imagine, such as feminism and other elements of woke politics, transgender economics. I've never heard of that before. I mean, is there a special economics for transgender people? But these aren't serious economists who are backing this plan. And if you look at the credentials of these people, you say, oh, my God, this is coming from academia and the far left of the political spectrum in Canada. And this is being pushed on us as a solution to a problem when all it's going to do is create incredible ramifications and consequences for the economy. And as I say, it's going to push Canada off the fiscal cliff. In terms of what it's going to cost, I think, you know, I better mention that it's probably going to double the national debt in 3 to 4 years. Now, our national debt, you've got your national debt up there every day. I see that as a $34 trillion. Canada's has right. always been about 10% because we have 10% of the population. Ours is approaching $4 trillion. So it's now higher than the 10% it always used to be. This could conceivably double the national debt in 4 to 5 years if this goes through. Now, can Canada afford this? Well, of course not. But it never seems to stop Trudeau, and it doesn't stop Joe Biden from getting involved in foreign wars and paying for infrastructure that's not really infrastructure. It's printing more money until the whole thing falls through. The floor is going to come through here. We cannot afford to keep sending billions to Ukraine, spending billions on infrastructure projects that are phony, and now having a universal basic income scheme that is going to potentially double the national debt. Of course, there's a reckoning coming here. There's a reckoning coming for these out of control, unthinking politicians who think all you have to do is keep printing money and that's the answer. But we are headed for catastrophe. And if this is seriously considered and then implemented, it's going to harken that catastrophe that much faster.
Yeah, I think 2024 is going to be a pivotal year. And with the 49% or so of the world's population dealing with elections this year, we're going to see some major changes in 2024. So we're just at the beginning. This is just the tip of the iceberg. I sure hope that Justin Trudeau is enjoying his $10,000 a day sunny vacations. By the way, I'll get you out of here on this, David, which was I saw a report that his wife, his separated or ex-wife or wife or whatever, was with him on these trips. And I saw some reporting on this. Was maybe curious. They talked about being separated because of some business relationship that she didn't want to be hauled in front of some sort of an ethics review. I don't know, but was she there on vacation with him in this Jamaica resort?
He was there. The children were there. The Trudeaus are supposed to be legally separated, and we all thought the divorce was imminent. But now they're vacationing together. And they're also going to Australia later this month. Another nice, warm place to go. I don't know where he's staying there. But believe me, I want to find out where he's staying there. Because once again, he is up to no good. And every time he leaves the country, he's a massive embarrassment, especially if he goes to India. And of course, the other funny thing is, his plane broke down again in Jamaica, just like it did in India when he was at the G20. And this aircraft is only 4 years old. So it's a Challenger, a Canadian Armed Forces Challenger jet, which he flies around the world with, increasing his carbon footprint every time he does. But it broke down. And of course, that just confounded the misery index for this whole trip, not just for his family, but for Canadians who are saying, what is this guy up to? It's happening every time he goes away.
It is embarrassing. It's the planes falling apart while his country's falling apart back home. David, great to see you. Great to see you here in 2024. Welcome to the new year. Handsome sweatshirt, as always. Really appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you so much, Clayton.
Thanks so much, David. Great to see you as well, and Happy New Year to you. Stay safe up there in Canada. We've got more news to get to here in a moment. We're going to look at the biggest trends for 2024. Our friend Gerald Salenti is going to be joining us from the Trends Journal. Many of you have been asking. I've gotten many tweets from many of you. Say, when is Gerald going to be back on the show? Well, your wish is our command. Gerald is a good friend, longtime friend, and he's going to be joining us here in just a moment. But first, it's no secret right now, if you're watching what's going on in the economy and you're seeing what's happening to the U.S. dollar, you're very concerned because you're putting money into a savings account and then it's losing value every day. We just got the new CPI numbers out today, and they're not good. That means the cost of goods went up again, especially in the manufacturing and some of the the dwelling costs for living has gone up. So those were the new CPI numbers today. And so when you're putting money in a savings account and it's losing value in your traditional savings account, that can really, really suck. Our friends over at Moomoo have just rolled out their new 5.1% API savings account. It's called their cash sweep account. So when you put your money in this account, if you're not currently investing it, like let's say you put $10,000 into your Moomoo account and you're waiting to maybe make investments, you're going to invest in some oil stocks or silver stocks or commodity stocks, whatever, and you're just sitting there and that money's just sitting there. Well, you can put it in the cash sweep account and earn 5.1%. And then if you decide to invest it later on, great. It's up to you. So that's what I do. I've got cash sitting in my Moomoo account that I wait on when I decide to make an investment. In the meantime, it's sitting there earning 5.1% API, which is fantastic. So all you need to do, and when you open your account, you're going to get 15 free stocks also just for opening the account. So think of it like a great savings account, really. Get 15 free stocks when you sign up. I mean, if you think about losses and depreciation, and you think, of course, about like what's happening right now with inflation of the US dollar, this is a great way right now for you to register, get 15 free stocks, and also put your US dollars so they're not, you know, losing against inflation right now. 5.1% is fantastic. And here's the link. You need to go to redacted.inc/moomoo. That's the website. You have to use that link to get 15 free stocks. redacted.inc/moomoo. Well, one of our favorite guests here on Redacted, our audience regularly asks to have Gerald Celente back, of course, the founder, the creator, the brilliant mind behind the Trends Journal, the man who predicted the stock market crash of 1987, the dot-com bust, the gold bull run, everything that we're currently seeing with Russia and beyond, of course, looking at the current trends and forecasting and being able to show us what is on the table for 2024. So we listen to our audience. And Gerald is back for the biggest trends of 2024. Gerald, great to see you, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for your kind words. I appreciate it.
Always. Our audience loves you. And I'm a big fan. Of course, you and I are friends and go way, way back many, many years. Yep. So it's great to have you here. And over the years, I've interviewed you and you've never failed to deliver. You've never failed to show unbelievable prescience looking at the future trends of what's actually happening here. I've interviewed you for many, many years, and you have a 40-year track record of identifying these trends. I don't want to ask you what your secret is, but I'm going to ask you, what is your secret?
Well, I became a political atheist back in the late 1970s. I was the chief government affairs specialist for the chemical industry. I was at 28 years old. I was staying at the Willard Hotel in D.C. and putting my meetings on at the Hay Adams. I was a different guy. I was killing environmental legislation at the height of the environmental movement in the 1970s. All I wanted to do was make money and keep moving up. And then the Iran war broke out. And just as they teach us to hate Russia, they taught us to hate Iran. And people didn't have a clue. Matter of fact, I wrote about this in my book, Trend Tracking, far better than Megatrends, Time Magazine. People didn't have a clue the United States overthrew the democratically elected government of Mossadegh in 1953, along with the UK, Winston Churchill. They finally put the information out in 2017 of the United States overthrow of Mossadegh. And they brought in the Shah. People had no idea of Savak, the secret police. They killed hundreds of thousands of Iranians. Mossadegh had the nerve, the gall, in 1953 to say, listen, this oil does not belong to British Petroleum or Standard Oil, better known today as ExxonMobil and the other one, the British one. So they overthrew the government. So when the people were protesting and millions of people are taking to the streets, I said, this thing's going to be real. And Jimmy Carter came back from spending New Year's Eve with the Shah and his wife. And he came back and he had a big day in those days, the helicopter, they salute. And he said that the Shah was the island of stability in the Middle East. In the Bronx, we used to have a saying, bullshit has its own sound. I said, this thing is going to go down. And I didn't know what I was doing. I bet a $5,000 bet in playing the futures markets in gold and oil. I said, both prices are going to go up. I became a political atheist at that point. I no longer believed in the government. And I turned those $5,000 bets into almost $750,000. And that's when I quit my job. And that's when I began trend forecasting in 1980. So what I do is I look at information for what it is, not the way I want it to be. So now we have the wars going on in Ukraine and the Israel war. So what do? I go all over the world looking for information that the governments in those countries are putting out. So with the Israel war, I want to see what the Times of Israel, Haaretz, Jerusalem Post is saying. I want to hear what Al Jazeera is saying. I want to hear what the Tehran News is saying. I want to hear what ISNA is saying. So I look at everybody to what they're saying. So what we do in the Trends Journal, we put down, this is what they're reporting. This is our analysis. And this is where we see it going. And this is what you might want to do. So there's no propaganda into it.
Right.
But again, it's continuing studying. I read 5-6 hours a day. So it's keep learning and to break out of the system.
And so the 2024 predictions, the top trends for 2024, I'm just going to pull a few of them out. I want our audience to go. We'll have a link in the description. People can go and actually you've been kind enough for our audience to get 10% off. If they want to sign up for the Trends Journal, just go to redacted.inc/trends. We'll have a link in the description if people want to check out the full Trends Journal on a regular basis. But let's look at your predictions for 2024. So I'm going to throw a few of them out here. There's 10 big predictions. I'm going to throw a few of them out here, and we'll just go through this. So here's one I love. EV, electric vehicles, go F you. EV, go F you. And we're starting to see some of this. So what do you see happening in the electric vehicle space?
It was hyped from the beginning, and we were writing about this. Again, that's what we also do in the Trends Journal. We put the links of all the articles we've written that are relative to what we're saying that go back many, many years. It's not what they promised. Take a look at the battery. When was the battery invented? 1800.
Right. A salt battery. A sodium battery. That was the predominant battery in the United States or in electric vehicles around the world at the time. In the 1800s was a sodium battery, not lithium ion.
And then you have to do all of the mining to get this. And you're telling me this is environmentally safe. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at the cost of it, how much it costs to recharge it, where are you getting the energy, by the way, to recharge it from?
Cool.
So it's a lot of BS. And now you look at the sales. They're going way down. Yeah, they're up in China. China's giving them big discounts when you buy them. That's why they're going up there. But the sales are going down around the world. Again, if the United States didn't put all the money, what is spending about over $1 trillion a year for the military industrial complex, and when you put in the CIA, the NSA, Homeland Security. Could you imagine if we put this money into research and development? Oh, you don't have to believe me. Once upon a time, there was a guy by the name of Dwight D. Eisenhower, 5-star general, Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces, farewell address. The military industrial complex is robbing the nation of the genius of the scientists, the sweat of the laborers, and the future of the children. So if we use the genius of the scientists to come up with an alternative, we wouldn't have these moronic electric vehicles. So they're not going to go anyplace fast. And you're looking at, again, all the recalls from Tesla and one after another. So this isn't going to be a good investment.
A good friend of mine, old co-host of mine, just tweeted the other day or posted the other day, now that they're not called tweets. He said he bought an electric vehicle and it's been an absolute disaster. His battery doesn't last at all. It lasts for like 30 minutes, then it has to charge overnight. He said, what a boondoggle it was. He fell for it and he'll never fall for it again. And I think you're hearing this from a lot of individuals. Certainly when you're going to see truckers and everything, you have to move to an electric vehicle fleet. It's not going to happen. Okay. So EV, go F you. Let's talk about the migrant madness. One of your forecasts for 2024 is migrant madness, mad as hell. Talk about the migrant madness. And this is on during a week in New York City when we're seeing thousands of illegal immigrants coming into a school, forcing out the students into their, you know, so that the students have to now go virtual learning because the students are being forced to, the illegal immigrants are now taking over the school, basically. So we're seeing this all over the country right now. Migrant madness, Gerald.
And it's all over the world. Let's go back again. All things are connected with trends, by the way. You know, say Chief Seattle said, all things are connected like the blood which unites us all. So let's go back and take a look at the economic picture. Let's go back to 2020. Just before the COVID war began, we put out our top trends. One of them was New World Disorder. Clayton, there were protests going on in Algeria, in India, in South Africa, in Lebanon, in Peru, in France, the yellow vests, people taking to the streets in protest of lack of basic living standards, government corruption, crime and violence. This is before this happened. People are taking the streets. COVID breaks out. You can't go out, get back in your home. So everybody forgot about that. Now what's going on? The global economy, oh, don't believe me. Don't believe our forecast. Say, how about the World Bank? Oh, they just came out on Monday they're looking for the global economy to have its like worst time in about 30 years. So now you look at the global economy going down, and what the COVID war did destroyed the lives and livelihoods of hundreds of billions of people. People are escaping where they are to get away. So that made a bad situation worse. Now, why are they coming into the United States? Oh, this is the United States that starts wars all over the world, and you can't stop people from coming in the borders? Two reasons why. Number one, and again, not my language, the language coming out of a clown playing councilwoman, a congressional in Brooklyn. Well, we want more people in here so we can get more people to vote for me, basically. And number two, cheap labor.
Yep.
You go, again, when I was a young man, there were grocery stores, hardware stores, stationery stores, drug stores. They're all chains now. You go to every one of them. I don't care which one you go to, a sign on the door, help wanted. People, they're paying the people nothing. They're plantation workers of Slavelandia. It's better than the plantation system because you had to house them and feed them then. Now all you do is give them enough money here, get out of here, come back tomorrow. They need labor, and they need cheap labor. So that's another reason why they're coming in, and I want to go back to put it all together. When I was a young kid, I'll never forget, my parents, may they rest in peace, they were trying to bring their cousin Constantino in from Napoli. They couldn't bring him in. The restrictions were so tight. Then they began to change under that other murderous bastard, LB Jerkoff Johnson. The Vietnam War, I'm prime Vietnam era draft meat back in those days. They drafted every guy. They needed cheap labor. He was the one that changed the immigration laws. And then in my book, Trends 2000, an international bestseller, that other warmongering piece of crap scum, Bill Clinton, every time I got caught with my pants down, bombs away over Baghdad, H-1B visas. This is the beginning of the internet revolution. They needed help. We don't want to pay a full pay. We're bringing them in from India. We're bringing them in from all over the world to work cheaply. That's why they changed all of this. So going back to it, now the people are paying for this in every country, paying for these people to come in, to house them, to feed them, to school, what are you, out of your mind? That's why you're seeing these populist movements building the way they are. Look at that clown that just got elected in the Netherlands over there.
Right, right.
So again, now put it together again. When the Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner Barack Obama, along with that other scumbag Sarkozy and Cameron, Sarkozy from France and Cameron from the UK, we got to get Gaddafi out of there. Gaddafi, anybody can look up the video. He said, you get rid of me, you're going to see a migrant crisis in Europe that you're not going to be able to stop. Because he was stopping them from coming out of Africa into Libya and going into Europe. Look, they wipe out Gaddafi, and that's the migrant, the refugee trend continues. So now the people are mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. This is going to be a major issue and the creation of new parties. Oh, you were just in Berlin. How about the AfD party, Alternative for Deutschland? Oh, right. Why are they getting so much popularity? Anti-immigration.
Right. Yeah. And I heard it from a number of farmers as I spoke to the farmers who were there demanding lower fuel costs, demanding lower taxes, asking for their government to stand up for them instead of sending money around the world for foreign wars. They repeatedly talk about the AfD, and they want a new government. They're demanding a new government in Germany. And so you're seeing it there, and you're seeing it in the United States. Tens of thousands of illegal immigrants pouring across the border every day. And this is what happens when you destabilize countries around the world, to your Libya point. Just look at Nicaragua. Just look at Somalia. You destabilize these countries, and then you have a massive influx of Somalis into the United States. That's how it happens. Let's talk about... there's so many good ones here on your list. I don't want to give them all away. Let's pick two more here. Speaking of this, let's talk about Arab Spring 2.0. This is another forecast for 2024. Arab Spring 2.0. What do you mean by that?
Well, you go back to the Arab Spring. They were protesting against the dictatorial governments that took over their lives. And now the economic situation has become a lot worse. And then now there's the Israeli war. When I was a young guy, back in the 1973, the Arab nations united and they put restrictions on oil exports to stop the 1973 Israeli war. And it worked. They're not doing anything now. And you're looking at the protests going on against the Israel war in Gaza, all over the world. So now the people are very disgusted with their governments for not doing anything about this. That's a major one. And the other one is they're sinking deeper into poverty. We are going to have an economic crisis unfold in 2024, the likes of which we've never seen before. The economies were artificially propped up to fight the COVID war. Look at the debt level you have in the United States, $34 trillion. How can anybody in business keep going in business when you have all this kind of debt? You can't. And that's what's going on. Not my language, but you're seeing defaults, failure, one after another coming all over the world. So now the economic conditions are going to get a lot worse and you're going to see a lot more protests. So look for another Arab Spring.
And then another one here on your list. Let's choose this. How about the presidential reality show? I'm not going to give away number one on the list. I'm not going to give away number two. I want people to go and read the full journal here. But I like this one. Presidential reality show, number four trend for 2024. What is this?
That's all it is. It's a reality show. Look at the clowns you got running. I mean, Trump was a reality show champion. It's all it is. It's a TV show. We were talking about what's going on in all of these countries in Europe with different populist movements. In America, nothing. The same clown show, different year, different time. So we're going to go into this election, and we're calling it a reality show. Go back. One of my lines is, when all else fails, they take you to war. What followed the Great Depression? Oh, World War II. What followed the dot-com bust? Oh, the war on terror. When the presidents are down, they go to war. So Biden, you look at the polls. The polls show, Trump could beat Biden. No, look at the other polls. The polls show that the people don't want either one of them. So we're going to see war ramp up so that Biden stays in office, if they even run it. So it's a freak show in front of everybody's eyes. There are no third parties, and it shows you the decline of America. Again, it's just another reality show.
It is. It's so sad that this is American politics. When you think these are the people that we have to pick from, These are the people. We've got warmongers. We've got criminals. Criminal in the White House right now. And this is what we've got to choose from. It's a sad, sad day. No third parties. We've never had a successful third party candidate. We got very close with Ross Perot. Hell, Theodore Roosevelt, who was president of the United States and then ran as the Bull Moose ticket a few years later as a third party candidate, couldn't even win. That's how entrenched the two-party system is in the United States, Democrats and Republicans. It's terribly sad.
Well, you know, I just want to comment on that. You know, people don't like me sometimes. They say, they don't like my language and my attitude. You know, grow up. How could you be so stupid to swallow the crap coming out of these morons' mouths? Who do you like the best? Dead in front of your eyes, Mitch McConnell, the Republican, you know, leader of the Senate. Oh, maybe you like little Chucky Schumer, an arrogant little clown boy. You were on Fox all those years. How many times did they interview a little piece of nothing like Lindsey Graham? A little clown, warmongering freak that couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag. It's a freak show in front of everybody's eyes. But hey, it's a reality show. And by the way, you go to trendsjournal.com and you can get one of these t-shirts.
I love it.
And here's the back. I was the assistant to the Secretary of the New York State Senate at 26 years old. I've been with presidents, prime ministers, and princes. I was in the system. It's a freak show. There are little boys and girls that wanted to be class president, head of the student council. Those are the ones running it. You're still in kindergarten, high school, and college. We got to change the system, but there's no fight. No fight in America. It's gone. Boop, gone.
Yeah. Well, they want to keep us all on antidepressants and you know, so you see alcohol commercials every 5 minutes on television, too. So they want to keep us sedated. They want to keep us down. They don't want us rising up. They want to keep it, you know. And then if you do, then you're labeled an extremist.
Yeah.
Gerald Celente, the Trends Journal, the new one is out now for 2024, the big forecast for the year. How often do you publish the Trends Journal? This is, of course, your big forecast for the year. The Trends Journal comes out every...
It's a weekly.
Weekly.
Over 170 pages a week. You could listen to it, print it out, PDF. You print out what you want. And again, it's the grand total. Now with the discount, we're talking about like $2 a week. When you go to your site and get it, it's around $2 and change. And if you don't like it, 30-day money-back guarantee. And I'm not saying this to brag, but there's no magazine in the world like it. We're the only one that tells you what in the world is going on, what it means, and what's next. And by the way, the motto of the Trends Journal is also, think for yourself. You know, this is the way we see it. This is where we see it going. But here are the facts. It's up to you to decide, you know, what's going to happen, what to do, and how to prepare, prevail, and prosper in these very, very dangerous times ahead.
Well, I love it. It's been something I've been reading for many, many years. So going back to many years when I first met you, and I absolutely love it. I think it's fantastic information. So check it out. We'll have a link. And thank you. Gerald was kind enough to set up a 10% discount coupon for any of our redacted viewers. So you just need to use the coupon code redacted. We'll have a link in the description. If you just go to redacted.inc/trends, it'll take you right to their page and you can get 10% off if you sign up for Trends. Gerald, great to see you. Happy New Year. I wish a lot of your predictions wouldn't come true, but you're always spot on. So we're going to see a lot of these things happening this year. But Happy New Year to you, Gerald. Great to see you.
And Happy New Year to you. And thank you so much for all that you do. What your show's putting out, the people that comment on it and watch it, it's what the world needs. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Gerald. Great to see you. And I mean, it's amazing interviewing Gerald for so many years. I go back, I don't know, almost over a decade with Gerald now. And it's amazing to see how spot on he's been with all of his forecasting. And it's not just predictions, like he's pulling stuff out of the sky.
right.
say, actual, you know, forecasting based on what's being said in the news, what's being said by these world governments, and then pulling all of this data together. So thanks, Gerald. And I should mention, if you guys do want to sign up again to get 10% off, the link is redacted.inc/trends. They're giving away a 10% discount for our viewers, which is great. You just have to use the coupon code redacted. If you want to sign up for the Trends Journal, it's a great website and it's a great journal to read on a regular basis. So thanks to Gerald. And thanks to all of you for being a part of our show today. We really appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for subscribing, being a part of our community. And we have a private community.
We do. And I just would like to point out that this is our first full week of 2024 of shows.
Yeah.
Feels good
to be back.
Like riding a bike, you guys. Like being here with you. So thank you so much.
Yeah. That's right. So we have a private community. It's our Plus Club. If you'd like to join the Redacted Plus Club today, go over to redacted.inc and become a member. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can join the conversation. You can join the exclusive content and the interviews that we release to you first before anyone else. The videos and stories and live streams that only you get as Redacted Plus members. Plus, it's just a way to support our community here. We are supported by you. We are not supported by billionaires. So thank you guys for supporting us. Of course, our show is free. You can watch it for free and subscribe. However, if you'd like to take that extra step and become a Plus member, you can do that at redacted.inc.
Well, thank you so much, everybody. We'll be back here on Monday. We'll have content for you all weekend. So please continue to visit the Redacted page, whatever platform you use. We really appreciate you. Have a great weekend. See you on Monday.
Bye, everyone.